we're sitting here with two premier companies in the world saying they're going to move the Alaska Gas Line project forward.
ExxonMobil joins TransCanada's push for an Alaska gas line. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 11th of June. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, reaction from Alaska's congressional delegation.
I've always been a little skeptical of AGIA, I'll be right up front, you know, but the reality is now it can be a possibility and I'm excited about it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by AGIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
ExxonMobil has joined in the plan to build a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to North American markets. In an announcement today with TransCanada, the two companies say they will work together toward developing the state's AGIA project, approved by the legislature in 2007 and awarded to TransCanada and its partner, Foothills, last year. The state has no say in the arrangement that gives ExxonMobil an undisclosed minority participation in the 1,700-mile, $26 billion project that hopes to open the state's so far undeveloped resource by September of 2018. TransCanada's Vice President Tony Palmer says his company will still be responsible for meeting the requirements of the state's AGIA license. Exxon's Marty Macy says the company isn't yet committing to becoming a full partner in the license, but it hopes it will eventually. Palmer says the alignment with ExxonMobil is a step forward on the project.
Both AGIA and TransCanada's application contemplated the addition of producers to the project, not just ExxonMobil, but others as well. You heard from Marty Massey and you heard from me today that we continue to seek alignment with other producers as well to make this project an ultimate success.
However, ExxonMobil is not ready to say it will ship gas on the line. Massey says that decision will be made during the open season next summer when all prospective shippers have the opportunity to reserve space on the line. North Slope gas leaseholders for years have resisted committing to a project until they get what they see as fiscal certainty, a guarantee that the state's tax regime will not change for an extended period of time. Exxon's Massey says there has not yet been any consideration of taxes or rates for the project, which will be part of the open season decision.
You know, ExxonMobil is not asking the state to enter fiscal discussions now in order for us to align with TransCanada. Similar to other major projects around the world, predictable and durable fiscal terms are necessary for the Alaska Gas Pipeline project. AGIA, in our mind, is the vehicle under which to address these terms. We have to work with the state of Alaska to address these important terms. At the same time, we are progressing the project with TC.
The state's gas team leader, Deputy Natural Resources Commissioner Marty Rutherford, concurs that tax stability has not been part of the discussions so far.
It is quite likely that anything associated with fiscal certainty would require legislative action. So this would be something that we have said all along. We would take to the people of the state, make it very clear what the exchange of values would be once we are, you know, once we have a sense of what that looks like and whether we support it or not. But at this date, we've had none of those discussions.
And Revenue Commissioner Pat Galvin said there are no plans now to present a new tax regime to the legislature. He says the state's current revenue structure will provide sufficient profit for the participants, and he says the AGIA statutes provide fiscal certainty for those who take part in the first open season.
We want to ensure that the terms that are going to be provided is an appropriate gives for gets on the part of the state, and that it be part of a public review process. And that's what we believe AGIA provides. That's what is available to this project as it advances. That's what AGIA allows to take place as forward movement continues on this project, and we don't end up with the project sitting dead center while negotiations are taking place.
TransCanada and Exxon opened private talks on the working agreement early this year. Exxon holds the rights to slightly more than a third of the Alaska North Slope natural gas reserves. Two other petroleum companies with substantial North Slope holdings, ConocoPhillips and BP, have been developing a competing pipeline project. Marty Massey of ExxonMobil says a goal of the new partnership would be to align the other companies with a TransCanada pipeline. Reaction in the nation's capital to the TransCanada deal with Exxon was positive today. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Interior Secretary Ken Salazar spoke for the Obama administration, saying the deal is a significant step forward. In a statement, Salazar called the project very important to the president and the Department of the Interior as a way to get American energy to the lower 48. The federal pipeline coordinator, Drew Pierce, was in Ottawa, Canada, when the news broke, meeting with senior Canadian officials about their regulatory process for the gas line. Pierce's office is charged with expediting getting a pipeline built. She agreed the announcement is significant.
We have the third major producer, North Slope producer, and the largest owner of gas on the North Slope now involved in actual participation with the project. Exxon has been standing watching over everyone's shoulder, and any discussion that ensued about the pipeline, at the end of the discussion, everybody would say, but what about Exxon? Well, now we know.
Pierce says the news doesn't change anything that's happening in her office. They're already working on a two-prong parallel process with TransCanada and the BP ConocoPhillips Denali project. Pierce says it is good timing for Exxon to get on board in advance of next year's open season when gas owners commit to using the pipeline.
All of the companies and the state all understand that failed open seasons would be a terrible blow to the project. It wouldn't necessarily kill it, certainly wouldn't help it for either or both open season to be failed. So hopefully this is a step in the direction of ensuring that that doesn't happen.
Alaska's congressional delegation also hailed the announcement as good news. Senator Lisa Murkowski is the top Republican on the Energy Committee and has been working to get sweetened financial provisions for a gas line in the current energy bill. Murkowski credited the governor's AGIA process with enticing TransCanada to the table, but says there are other factors at work.
On the other hand, the other two producers, BP and Conoco, did not feel that they could come within AGIA. They've gone out on their own to help facilitate a project. So whether you can credit AGIA or whether the stars are in alignment now with what's happening in the energy markets, or whether the fact that it's just time that this project has come together, I'm just pleased that we are where we are.
Senator Mark Begich agreed that AGIA was part of the equation, but just part.
I'm not sure if the AGIA by itself. I think the issue of the amount of gas, especially the development in Point Thompson that Exxon's now doing, indicates to them that they have to move product to the market. And if it's stuck up there and there's no line to move it, they got a stranded resource. And I think that's part of it. Also, when you look at Exxon's larger portfolio, they're looking for resources now all around the globe.
Begich garnered criticism from Governor Palin's office last week when he questioned the speed of progress on a gas line. The senator says he's focused on making development of a line a national priority and says the White House is behind that. However, Congressman Don Young took a stab at the administration and Democratic House leaders, saying they haven't helped. Instead, he credits Alaskans and Governor Palin and says he's been working on turning the tide on the gas line dream for 30 years. Young says the market is not ripe for building a line yet, but he thinks the producers are looking down the road to 10 years from now when gas could flow.
They see that the only way a line can be delivered to the best market is that trans-Canadian line. I've always been a little skeptical of AGIA. I'll be right up front, you know, but the reality is now it can be a possibility, and I'm excited about it.
The congressional delegation says a gas line is by no means a done deal, but they say this latest announcement does bring the project a step closer to reality. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
U.S. District Judge John Sedgwick today ordered former Alaska lawmakers Pete Kott and Vic Horing to be released immediately from prison. He asked the United States Marshal for Alaska to provide airline tickets for the men to travel home at the earliest time possible. The court will set terms for their continued release at a hearing in Anchorage on June 17th. The Republican lawmakers were convicted of accepting money from a company that would have benefited from legislation favoring the gas pipeline project. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder last week asked the appeals court to remand the cases and to release the former lawmakers. The Justice Department found that prosecutors improperly handled evidence in their 2007 trials on corruption charges. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, stimulus dollars will help protect the state from wildfires.
These treatments give us some real working room in there to potentially avoid a disaster fire.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. In today's competitive business climate, the advantage lies in reducing cost and increasing efficiencies. A safe and healthy workplace reduces cost and improves productivity. To get started, contact the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development's Occupational Safety and Health Consultation and Training Program at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
A Catholic priest who serves the University of Alaska Fairbanks St. Mark's Parish is accused of sexually abusing a minor. A civil lawsuit filed against the Reverend Gerald Ornowski claims he sexually abused a young girl in the Bering Sea Coast village of Stebbins while serving there in the 1990s. Diocese legal coordinator Ronnie Rosenberg says the diocese oversees Ornowski's work here and is shocked by the allegations.
Father Gerald has no criminal record, and there is nothing in his personnel file or any awareness that we had of anything of this nature. So it did come as quite a surprise to us.
Rosenberg says the 74-year-old Ornowski, who is currently undergoing medical treatment in Massachusetts, has been placed on administrative leave until an investigation into the allegations can be completed. Plaintiff's attorney Chris Cook says the case is somewhat unique because the accused is still living.
There may be a fuller chance to explore all the facts than there are with cases where people are deceased and the church authorities say, well, gee, we can't find any records about this. We don't know anything about it.
Hundreds of people have already filed claims alleging abuse by more than a dozen clergy that served under the oversight of the Fairbanks Diocese. So far, just one person is claiming abuse by Ornowski. But Cook says there may be more victims.
It's our experience that often these things don't happen in isolation, that it's, you know, that often there's more than one victim. That's been the case in the past. It may be the case, but we don't have the information at this time.
Father Ornowski is part of a Massachusetts-based religious order and is on assignment in Alaska. The Stockbridge, Massachusetts-based Congregation of Marians is named in the civil suit, but the Fairbanks Diocese is not because it's already in bankruptcy due to abuse claims. A deadline for inclusion in a pending settlement has passed, but the Diocese Rosenberg says new victims are still encouraged to come forward.
I don't want anyone to think that because of the bankruptcy and the bar date in the bankruptcy that they shouldn't still come forward and let us know what has happened and make a claim.
Rosenberg says it's possible compensation will be extended to post-deadline claimants. Today, Ornowski denied the allegations against him. The latest abuse suit marks only the second time that a Fairbanks-based priest has been accused. Father Richard McCaffrey was removed from the priesthood in 2005 following an investigation of alleged abuse early in his career while serving in Western Alaska. Of all those seeking refuge at Anchorage shelters, among the most desperate are those escaping domestic violence. In recent months, their numbers have increased to the point that space has become critical at the shelter created to protect them. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
For years, women in Anchorage escaping a physically abusive relationship have turned to AWAKE, Abused Women's Aid in Crisis. At AWAKE, the women and their children found legal and financial advice, medical assistance, and most of all, a secure environment safe from their tormentors. Recently, Judy Cordell, a Wake executive director, sent an email which she said was not meant to alarm but to inform. The Awake shelter had been at overcapacity for months, but in late May, the situation reached a new level.
We're full. We currently have 88 in shelter, and that's nearly 40 more than our maximum capacity.
Cordell adds over half are children, including 15 babies. Anchorage's homeless shelters, particularly those accepting children, are almost always at capacity. Clare House, McGinnell House, Safe Harbor are all currently full with waiting lists. But the women coming to Awake have special protection needs. Cordell says that's why the capacity problem is so crucial.
We do have a secure facility, and we find that with such an overcapacity need, we're really only taking into this main shelter the most lethal risk cases, and those cases require a very safe setting. In fact, this year, on several occasions, we've had victims assaulted as they were trying to come in the door and on our property.
And the women and their children must remain at Awake until it's safe for them to move elsewhere.
Participants only stay in shelter here for a few weeks on average. As soon as we secure alternate accommodations or the lethality risk goes down, for instance, perpetrator is incarcerated and we're able to move them safely out, we do that and immediately bring someone else in. And we've been running a wait list for months.
That wait list does not mean that the women have to remain in an abusive relationship until room becomes available. Cordell says Awake works with community partners to find safe alternatives. She stresses no woman should endure domestic violence because she's heard Awake has a capacity problem. She says call for help. Cordell hasn't seen anything like this client upsurge. Other shelters have reported similar increases, with some older personnel likening the situation to the early 1980s. At that time, the national economy was in a downturn, while Alaska was somewhat better off. Cordell wonders if families are coming to Alaska and then finding that their plans evaporate in the Anchorage reality. That frustration fuels family violence. The public relations coordinator for the Salvation Army of Alaska, Jenny Raglan, says the McKinnell House for families has experienced an outside and rural influx.
When I talked with our director at McKinnell House last week, 20% of the families had come from areas outside of Alaska. We had another 8% that came from other communities inside Alaska.
Raglan says that outside trend has been going on for more than a year. She says McKinnell House has even received calls from outside families trying to make space reservations in advance. Clare House reports similar situations, including one family that simply called from the Anchorage airport for a van to pick them up. Clare House couldn't help. Cordell hopes Awake and the others can balance service demands with community commitment to provide those needs.
I do have to wonder at this juncture if there could be a point down the road, maybe a week or 2 weeks or 6 months from now, whereby the capacity to respond is not there. You know, I don't want to instill panic. What I would like to do is encourage continued active dialogue, which already is underway in Anchorage, to anticipate and then be able to planfully respond to any continued upward trend in need.
One good sign, Awake's financial contributions are up, both corporate and private. This is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The H1N1 swine flu has reached Alaska, and there are simple ways to avoid catching or spreading this or any virus. Wash your hands often with soap and water, or use a waterless hand cleaner. Cough into your sleeve or into a tissue rather than your hands, and stay home if you're sick. Contact your health care provider. More information is available on the state website at pandemicflu.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
President Barack Obama signed a disaster declaration today for villages devastated by ice jam flooding along the Yukon River this spring. The action frees up federal funding for individuals and businesses. The aid can include grants for temporary home repairs, low-cost loans to cover uninsured property losses, and other programs to assist in the recovery effort. State forestry managers plan to get right to work on federally funded wildfire fuels reduction projects around Fairbanks. Area Forester Mark Lee says work on the economic stimulus funded projects will get underway this summer.
The stimulus plan actually is pretty short-tracked. Our guys will be hiring two 20-man crews. We're going to start hand felling this summer, and then during the winter we'll shear blade the rest of those areas.
Those areas include spruce forests off the Elliott Highway in the Washington Creek drainage, in the Two Rivers area off Chena Hot Springs Road, and near Salcha around Harding Lake.
Higher risk areas, we call them zones of concern, where we have extensive stands of black spruce and homes mixed in those. And these treatments give us some real working room in there to potentially avoid a disaster fire.
Lee says 1,100 acres of 100-yard-wide firebreak will be cut by fall 2010. Sea Alaska board members could face term limits under a measure before shareholders. If it passes, the Regional Corporation for Southeast Natives would see a major change in its elected leaders. Shareholders are also considering giving elders more stock. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Most Sea Alaska board members have been in their positions for a long time. Some shareholders want that changed. They petitioned to put a term limit resolution on the corporation's ballot, which is now before shareholders. It would restrict board members to two consecutive terms and require a three-year break before they run again. Juneau shareholder Mick Beasley is one of the proposal's backers.
We want to open up leadership to new people. There's like 20,000 of us in. There is a core of 13 people who control the purse strings to our company. Really, they are the beneficiaries. We are not. And all we want to do is spread the jam around a little bit.
Beasley, a journeyman artist, says the only candidates who ever win are on board-approved slates. And when they retire, replacements are named before elections so they can run as incumbents.
It seems like everything's by appointment now. It's like a gentleman's club, including the women. You know, and it's all at the expense of shareholders. We haven't had an independent shareholder elected in years.
Sea Alaska's board opposes the term limits resolution. Members say it restricts shareholders' rights to vote for whomever they want. Vice Chairwoman Rosita Wuerl of Juneau says the measure would force her and 10 other board members to leave over the next 3 years. She says that would hurt the business.
Sea Alaska is a strong company. It has a good, stable board. If we should lose 11 of our board members within a three-year period, you know that businesses don't like to do business with companies that don't appear to be stable.
Wuerl says the board already has a slow, natural turnover, but a significant leadership change would put too many members in a steep learning curve.
We know that it does take time to acquire the experience and knowledge about Sea Alaska. I mean, it's not just any regular corporation. There's just a lot of different dimensions to it that make it very complex. So we think it's important to maintain this institutional knowledge on the board.
If the measure passes, it would begin with next year's elections. Five incumbents and eight challengers are seeking the five board seats on this year's ballot. A second resolution before Sea Alaska members this year would give original shareholders 65 and older 100 extra shares of stock. A similar measure failed to pass in 2007. Wuerl says that's in part because voting rules required a majority of all possible ballots. The board has since gotten a congressional change allowing the measure to pass with a smaller majority.
We got that change to a simple majority, and as we promised, we put that back on as a resolution for our shareholders this year to vote on a resolution that would give elders 100 shares of life estate stock. We're encouraging our shareholders to vote yes for that.
the elder shares would carry no voting power and could not be handed over to descendants. They would pay dividends from general earnings, but not from a natural resource revenue sharing pool all regional corporations pay into. That fund has substantially boosted recent dividends. Sea Alaska estimates about 2,200 elder shareholders would get the extra stock. Another 9,000 to 10,000 would benefit as they turn 65. The shares will boost elders' dividends while shrinking others' earnings. Beasley says that's why he's concerned about the resolution.
I'm not against elders. However, it sort of seems like we're developing class systems within our corporation, all at the expense of original shareholders.
Voting results will be announced at Sea Alaska's annual meeting, June 27th in Sitka. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is part of a bipartisan trio sponsoring a bill that would require restaurants to list calorie counts in menus or on signs. It would affect restaurants that are part of a chain with 20 or more locations. They would also need to be able to give customers who request it additional nutritional information, including fat and sugar content. Small businesses would be exempt. Murkowski says more Americans are frequently eating out and aren't informed about what's actually on their plates.
Bit by bit, we are gaining in our educational effort to make consumers better understand what they're putting into their bodies and how they can take charge of their own health care and thus reduce their costs and have a happier, healthier lifestyle.
Murkowski worked on the bill with two Democrats, Senator Tom Carper of Delaware and Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. Harkin notes that about one-third of Americans are overweight. He says having a federal standard will override local or state policies and make nutrition information uniform, just like it is on food labels in grocery stores.
To ensure that consumers have the benefit of consistent information, whether they're in Waterloo, Iowa, Wilmington, Delaware, or Fairbanks, Alaska, the agreement requires national uniformity with respect to the nutrients that can be provided on the menu, as well as the manner in which they are disclosed.
The Menu Education and Labeling Act is a compromise between two different bills. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Diabetes Association, and some restaurant groups, including Dunkin' Donuts and the National Restaurant Association, support the legislation. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. Our intern is Susanna Caldwell. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the UAF College of Engineering and Mines, providing early registration for fall engineering classes at 1-877-474-7390. Information at uaf.edu/cem. Operating a forklift is serious business, and operators are required to be properly trained and certified. The emotional and financial damage can be severe when a family member never comes home from work or comes home with a debilitating injury due to a forklift accident. Training information is available at 1-800-656-4972. Good, safe jobs are Alaska's future. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.